Welcome. This week, we begin with a story.
I guess another big wake-up aspect for me was in 2012, actually, when I was on a Vipassana course. So this was day 7 of the Vipassana course. And generally, they don't give you dinner. You just have like breakfast and lunch. And I found that because all you do is basically eat, sleep, and meditate the whole day, I found I didn't even need lunch. So I was basically just gone through the 7 days without having lunch. And then the course manager sees me when the lunch bell rings on day 7, going to my room and not going to the dining hall. And he's like, "Why are you up going to the dining hall?" And I was like, "I'm not having lunch. I have lunch on the last day that they call Metta Day." And he was like, "I'm not sure if you're allowed to do that. Go see the meditation teacher." So I see the meditation teacher and she says to me, "You're not allowed to fast." And I said, "I'm not fasting. I'm having breakfast every day. I'm just not having lunch." And that's a commitment I set myself. And then she's, "You need to follow the rules." And I said, "That show me anywhere in the rules where it says you have to have lunch and I'll have lunch. But if not, please just respect what I'm committed to myself." And she said, "No, you either have lunch or you leave." So I said, "Fine, if you're literally going to kick me off the course for not having lunch, I'll leave." So I switch on my phone. You know, these courses are no communication for 10 days. So you have no phone, no internet, no talking. So my phone's been off for 7 days. So I switch on my phone. And the first person I speak to is like my ex-girlfriend. And I explain to her what's happening. And she's saying, "Kush, you can be stubborn." So I'm like chatting to her hearing this. And I see that there's some missed calls on my phone. I get another missed call from a withheld number. And I'm like, maybe I should take this. It seems important. So I take the call. And this was 2012 in London. And it was a call from the Paralympics, like the LOCOG committee. And they basically said that, "We've been trying to contact you for 7 days. I've been on the course for 7 days. They said that if we couldn't contact you today, we would have to give this opportunity to somebody else. You're the last person to accept to be a torchbearer for London 2012 Paralympics. Do you want to be a torchbearer?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." And that literally transformed my life, like from leaving financial services, investment banking, to starting up a charity, to trying to help people. Things didn't really go exactly how I wanted them to, but by being a torchbearer at that time, that suddenly started to open up all these doors. But the truth was, if I didn't trust myself at that moment and just trust my inner being, I would have done the 10 days. I would have had lunch and received a voice message saying, "Mate, you could have been a torchbearer for London 2012 Paralympics, but sorry, you missed it." So life sometimes is really weird. I've had many of these kind of wake-ups and kind of synchronicity elements. And it's in some way always been linked to having faith and belief and mindfulness, even if I'm actually getting kicked off meditation courses and retreats.
Welcome to episode 9 of Mindful Conversations. This week's episode is called Wake Up Moments. The solution could be the problem. Well, great. Little story there from our friend and colleague, Kush Kanodia. Any initial thoughts on that story, Calvin?
What Kush said, Shamash, particularly with his commitment to his own journey of having just one meal a day, basically. So he was on his retreat and he talked about this commitment to himself. And I thought, well, that was quite interesting because so often, you know, I have experienced similar retreats to Kush too in the past. And I actually just follow the structure because, yeah, you know, I accept that, okay, this is for a reason. But what if my intuition is telling me something else? So that was one of the things that stood out for me.
Amazing commitment as well. I'm not sure if I've ever managed to lunch and dinner on any days. Have you done any fasting, by the way, just as an aside?
Yeah, I do fasting from time to time. I did a 3-day fast last month and just water only. And then maybe once a month or so, I'll do a 36-hour fast. Just give the body a space and opportunity to reset itself.
I think it's good. I think, you know, it's actually in a lot of different spiritual traditions, isn't it? Fasting and the importance of fasting. And it also, I think it strengthens that part of our minds to do with commitment. So we're talking about acceptance and commitment therapy or training. And that commitment element is really powerful. And the great thing about the story we just heard is that Kush decided intuitively, or, you know, he just felt that this is what he wanted to do and practice. And he stuck to that commitment. And, you know, the logical mind will say, no, you should, you know, do what they're saying or just do what the teacher's telling you. But in this case, he decided, no, I want to stick with my commitment. I want to be true to my own values and what I believe I need to do. And that led to a really nice synchronicity.
Yeah. And I know it's something you advocate for a lot in our conversations about psychological flexibility. So sometimes actually we can commit and then we can reset our commitment as well, can't we? Maybe we may start off with a particular commitment and then say, well, actually, I've got enough flexibility based on the contextual change of the situation that my commitment now changes. Would that be fair to say that's important?
Yeah, I would say that's well put. It's not about committing to a sense of rigidity. It's not committing to a certain rule that our mind has created and having to stick to that rule no matter what. It's about committing, as Kush did, to this inner instinct, this inner intuition that this is a value that I believe in. And in this particular situation, I'm going to stick with it. So it's not so much about making rules, but actually tuning into our body, into our feeling, into something that feels that deeper inside that we feel, actually, this is what my heart really desires. And this is something really important.
Committing to that internal system, the values that you talk about as well, a lot of committing to the inner wisdom. And then, of course, Kush mentions a synchronicity as well, which led to something miraculous for him in his experience.
Holding the torch for the London 2012. And he was the last person to do that. And that was the last day. And that was the last moment and the last opportunity. And it led to, you know, I've known him for quite a few years. That led to so many other opportunities. So that one choice or decision fortunately led to a wonderful flowering of other opportunities. So I love that. And I'm a big fan of synchronicities and looking out for the meaningful coincidences that happen and celebrating them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So for Kush then, he has this wake up moment. His happened in quite a fascinating, a funny way, actually, in some ways. And it's a lot allowed for things to align for. But people have wake up moments in all kinds of situations. And we spoke to Mary Williams, our friend and therapist. And here's what she had to say.
I wouldn't describe it as a wake up moment because I think they're going through. So I think there's not a kind of waking up point. I think what they realize is that they are stronger than they ever thought they were. And I think some people go to therapy and coaching and they go thinking it's a cure. I'm going to come out of this and I'm going to be done and I'm going to be great. And some therapy is like that, let's be honest. They fix that a little bit and then something else comes up and they don't know how to deal with it. And what I'm trying to say to people is actually, if you learn these tools of being really honest with yourself, being able to accept, yeah, bad stuff happens in the world, what are my tools to deal with that? Then when you have those dark night of the soul times, actually, you just know you're going to be okay. And I think that's when they've done that once, the I'm okay, I think is a really powerful phrase. I say to people, how are you doing? I'm okay. Okay is like a lovely space to be in, isn't it? I'm okay. And I think I watch it like it's almost like they power up. And it's like, okay, do you know what? If my child dies, if my partner leaves me, if something catastrophe happens in the wider world, that is going to be devastating, but I will be okay. And I think that's the shift. And on top of that, taking ownership for their life. I am going to do everything I can to not get to that point. But if it happens, if the worst happens, I will be okay.
Mari has shared with us some really insightful parts of her experience as a therapist and ways of actually looking at those wake up moments. So Mari actually said something here for me about honesty, self-honesty as a key element of the waking up process, if you like, because she references the dark night of the soul and how actually if we knew that it was more about a long-term almost resilience, which I know we're going to unpack a bit later, aren't we, Shamash, in our next episode. But she does mention a little bit that hints towards that, and waking up is a continuous process.
It makes me reflect about when we're talking about waking up, just what are we talking about? Yeah, obviously we wake up in the morning, hopefully every morning and start our day. But what does it mean to wake up? And I'm thinking it from the storytelling journey. And if we could split the hero's journey into two parts, it's going from the old world or our old sense of self to our new sense of self. Would you agree with that? And would you say waking up is part of waking up to who we truly are?
I think we often talk about waking up in the context of seeing a new reality, And in the hero's journey, I think there is this point, especially in this part of the journey, where we have this, what we call seizing the sword or the reward in the hero's journey, which we discover a power that resides within us that's greater than what we think, a leveling up, if we use modern vernacular, and maybe even the transcendent self, perhaps.
The transcendent self element, or at least having a more flexible sense of self, is an important part of the ACT journey. And we've discovered that from a mental health perspective, having a much more flexible sense of who we are is really important. And so for us to be able to challenge our sense of who we are, or not only thinking I am good at this, or I am bad at that, or I do have this mental health problem, or I don't have that, putting ourselves in these boxes is easy to do in a sense. And I think this is what we do as human beings quite often. But what does it mean to be able to open up that box and to be more flexible in seeing who we actually are? To do that requires a sense of vulnerability. We need to be able to open our hearts and say, hey, maybe this is just one way of seeing things, or this is only one way of seeing who I am. And maybe it's possible to see myself in a different way. We spoke to Dr. Maywish Sharif about this, and this is what she had to say about this topic.
Often people will change through that process. So who they were and what they were before that won't be who they are now and what they're feeling now. And then after, that's when we talk about the real growth of a person, and that real commitment to change often comes after that. But I think when they're in that moment, the important thing is to accept vulnerability. And I don't think we're very good at doing that. So accepting that we are feeling vulnerable, and then being able to lead without vulnerability, is very difficult to do. So in terms of coaching, that's what we need to do. We need to focus on that vulnerability, the acceptance around that, but also then encouraging that we can be flexible to be able to adapt to, I call it spring clean our life and spring clean our mind, what no longer serves, and start thinking about that. And that's part of the healing and recovery process. So you're reducing the clutter in our mind and in our hearts and in our lives, and really starting fresh. And sometimes people really respond to that. So you could talk about changing of seasons. You could talk about changing of weathers. Again, this is part of storytelling. So once you start making that connection with, okay, out with, in with a new, or this is a temporary phase, this will change, or turning a fresh leaf, light at the end of the tunnel, people really start responding to that sort of imagery, as it were. And I think that's the key here, that we can be vulnerable, but we can be strong in our vulnerability.
Commitment and vulnerability comes out really strong in what Dr. Maywish had to share with us. And, you know, I love this topic of vulnerability as well, because it is part of our power. We're talking about discovering our power. We're talking about this realization of the inner power when we wake up to this in the first place. And vulnerability is a big part of that. What is vulnerability, though, Shamash? What does that actually really mean?
I think it's a willingness. There's a willingness there. And it takes a huge amount of courage to open our heart and be honest with others about what's going on the inside. In the whole world of social media, it's very easy to share good things that are happening, positive things happening. But how often do people share what's really going on the inside? I read a nice quote the other day, which is, don't compare other people's outsides to your insides. And especially on social media, you get this massive stream of pictures of people in great locations or doing really nice things or showing success or getting married or having children, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
You often get lots of likes and shares as well.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, hang on a minute, what's going on in my life? This comparison starts kicking in. And yeah. I am noticing more and more people are finding the courage to be vulnerable and share about how they're actually feeling or what's really happening in their lives. And how wonderful that is for other people to read. It gives you a sense of, oh, I'm not on my own with my challenges and my difficulties.
Like a shared journey in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's really powerful. And linking up to that, we were fortunate enough to talk to Dr. Stephen Hayes, the originator and one of the key developers of ACT. And he is vulnerable in sharing his story of how he coped with tinnitus and the huge challenge that he caused him. And also, he starts touching on this idea of how the solution that our mind gives to trying to deal with our challenges can sometimes be a massive problem.
Now, your mind says, oh, giving up on that means that it's never going to go away. No, in fact, watch your experience. The thing that's been gluing this in place and building it out is your so-called solution. The real problem is your so-called solution. And if you could see it from Mount Olympus or something, you might give up on a stupid solution. I mean, if somebody said, you know, the way that you fix pain is you take a rubber mallet and you hit the parts that are painful, and you went to the doctor and said, I have a headache. And you're going like this, boom, boom, boom. And the doc looks at you and says, yes. And they say, well, fix it, fix it, fix it. And you say, could we start by putting down the hammer? You wouldn't think the person's a bad physician. You might look and say, what? What a hammer? Oh, a hammer? I'm hitting myself. Yeah, you are. It's behind your sight. You don't see it. But yeah, you're doing that. Why? Oh, I was told that's how it fixed it. No, put that down. Okay. It still hurts. Yeah, you've been beating your head for a while. Well, what should I do? Well, let's first put it down. Then let's see. And so that's what ACT asks you to do. Not out of faith, not of, I believe, you know, because that's another mindy dictator within, but about your own experience. If you come to me and say it's not working, let's do something different. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And what have you been doing? Have you not been focusing on your thoughts, your feelings, your bodily sensations, your memories, with an agenda of you are going to subtract, diminish, eliminate, or put to the side? You're going to make them less plausible, less intense. You're going to somehow subtract and make them go away. Well, what if by doing that, I'll give you an example. You have to see if it did that. Well, that means you have to look at it. Well, that means they're present. I've got ringing between my ears that is screaming. I mean, to the point that I actually lose hearing in certain dimensions, right? Why? Because I'm a punk rocker who grew up. I stood stupidly in front of 50-foot tall speakers, kicking out 170 decibel music that I loved from these tatted up, crazy ass singers who were making noise like aircraft engines. I just loved it. I love the Sex Pistols. I love X. I loved all that. And I lived in a place where those bands would come through. I lived in North Carolina. At the time, they weren't popular enough. They'd drive from Atlanta to DC and they'd stop in Greensboro. And so Wednesdays, you can get in these tiny little bars and they'd unload their vans and they would shriek this music that just moved me. I loved it. Well, when you're 71, it means you hear it night then, right?
Wow.
Except I don't hear it but about once a week. For 3 years, it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I have the noisemakers. I got all the things the audiologist tells me to do. And then I have a thought like, I should just shoot myself and then the noise will go away. And this little voice comes in, dude, that's a suicidal thought. Perhaps you should apply your life's work to this. It took me 3 freaking years to have the thought. And then about 2 days, it was gone. Not the noise. It's there 24/7. I just don't give a
Was it 2 days of, let me stop trying to fix this?
I took one long walk.
Yeah.
And I would say it was 60% solved at the end of the walk. Because I just looked at what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to make the noise go away by following a rule that maybe kept checking to see if the noise had gone away. Listen to see if there's an air conditioner or heater in your room.
I'm in the UK, so just open the window and that's air conditioning.
Well, a window. So can you hear anything outside the window?
I can hear a little bit of background noise. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Were you hearing it 20 seconds ago?
No.
Your ears were. I mean, the hairs in your ears were vibrating. Okay. We were tracking it. It didn't even make it past the brainstem. You know, it's irrelevant.
Oh, why?
You're not dealing with it cognitively. You're not wasting your time on that. You only are accessing a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of what comes into you, right?
Wow. Well, that's just such a beautiful example from one of the world's leading psychologists of vulnerability. And he shared how challenging an experience he went through. And also, Dr. Hayes talks about how even for someone like himself, who's actually helped to develop acceptance and commitment therapy, and yet somehow, because of all his busyness and everything else going on, he found himself avoiding the sounds in his head, the tinnitus he was experiencing, and pushing it further and further away until he actually ended up having a suicidal thought and then realizing, hang on a minute, What about if I stop trying to fight it? What if I stop trying to get rid of it? What if I just learn, go on this walk and just fully accept this experience I'm having right now? What would happen then?
I find the really standout point for me that resonated was, I think, linking back to what we were saying earlier about commitment not being about rigidity. It's about committing to actually being flexible, to accepting and being flexible. It's quite funny.
If you go earlier in his story, that hilarious example of you hitting yourself in the head with a rubber mallet. And if you keep saying, I'm not going to give up, I'm going to keep hitting my head with a rubber mallet, you're going to be in trouble. He listened to someone else in that little mini example. He listened to the doctor. Maybe you need to put that mallet down. Maybe you need to try something different. And there's the vulnerability, and that takes courage. And that's about trying something new. And that's about variation. And that's something I'm really, I think is really important as well. And maybe that will link up a little bit with our next episode. What do you think?
Yep. The next episode, actually, in the hero's journey, the road back, we will be talking about grit and that resilience, that quality of not giving up and what it takes, because actually the challenges don't disappear. But now we have our power. Now we've discovered this element that is in us. We can then apply that with a sense of determination, with a sense of perseverance, resilience, and grit. So definitely looking forward to be discussing that with you, Shamash, and our guests in the next episode. But this is the end of the journey for us right now. And we just want to say thank you for listening. And if you like what you heard, then please leave us a review, tune in, ask us a question even. We'd be happy to answer a question in the next episode. We'd be delighted to do that next time, won't we, Shamash?
See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye for now.